Chapter 17. 2 weeks of his house being Pac Central is about enough to drive Tom around the bend. He understands why Peter chose teenagers, but the drama levels are out of control. Derek and Scott seem to hate each other, and Tom has no idea why. No matter what one of them is talking about, the other one has to come in and talk over them. To make things worse, Isaac has been bonding with Scott through lacrosse and staying at the McCall house, and he keeps getting into snarkfests with Styles that tread dangerously close to actual fights. Erica keeps teasing Styles and Derek about their non-existent relationship, which upsets Derek and, for some reason, annoys Scott. Boyd clearly thinks their drama is ridiculous. Allison is upset because her mother is still trying to get her to break up with Scott, and nobody besides the two of them seems to care, which only irritates her further. "Why don't you just break up with him then?" Derek asks, after a particularly prolonged soliloquy. Scott scowls and says, "Why don't you mind your own business?" "Why don't you go?" Derek starts. "Derek, come help me with these steaks," Tom shouts, before things can escalate. He hears Derek give a low growl, but then he comes into the kitchen. Tom picks up the platter and says, "Get the back door for me, will you? And then come outside to give me a hand with the grill." "Sure." Derek's shoulders are hunched inwards as he follows Tom down the back steps. He stops when he sees that the grill isn't even lit yet, and gives Tom a suspicious look as he reaches for the charcoal. "What am I doing out here?" "Helping me with the grill before you and Scott murdered each other. Which, hey, now that I have you alone, what exactly is going on there?" Derek's uncertain look turns into a scowl. "I don't like him." "Yes," Tom says, drawing the word out. "You have made that abundantly clear. Is there a particular reason you don't like him?" Derek is silent for a long moment before he bites out. He hurts Styles, and he doesn't even realize he's doing it. "Oh, boy." Tom sighs as he wads up newspaper to put in the bottom of the chimney starter. "Okay, yes, I'm aware that Styles' feelings have been a little bruised by Scott's relationship with Allison, and I don't have a problem with you being protective of him, but you're really only going to make the situation worse." "It's not just the thing with Allison. It's this whole werewolf thing. He keeps going on about how awesome it is and how he doesn't get why Styles doesn't want to be a werewolf. And he's totally oblivious to the fact that every time he says something like that, Styles wants to crawl underneath the table and die." Tom grimaces a little. He's not surprised that Derek has picked up on this, and he's not surprised that Scott hasn't either. "Okay, I'll grant that Scott can be a little insensitive, which I might point out, so can Styles, but when Scott came over the first time and Styles told him who I was, Scott asked about me showing up at the dance. Styles told him that I was just there to keep him from looking like a pariah, and Scott looked like a goddamn light bulb had gone off over his head. He said, 'Oh, I get it,' like he couldn't believe anybody would actually want to date Styles." Now Tom really winces. "I'm sure he didn't mean it that way." "No, he didn't. But he also didn't notice when Scott wouldn't look at either of us for the next half hour. He's so oblivious. It's insanely frustrating." "I can see that it would be," Tom says. "But you have to remember that everyone views themselves as the protagonist of their own story." Derek frowns. "Meaning?" "Meaning that Scott is currently wrapped up in this Romeo and Juliet thing he's got going on. To him, Styles is..." "Benvolio," Derek suggests. "I'm going to assume you know more about Shakespeare than I do, so sure," Tom says, and Derek's lips twitch. "So maybe he doesn't see everything going on with Styles, or think it's as important as this world-ending, life-changing romance he's got going on. Styles is the subplot, and I might point out it's one that Scott is still pretty invested in, since, you know, he's here. And I'm pretty sure the reason he keeps snarling at you is because he's jealous that Styles has a new friend, one who isn't him." "That's his problem, not mine," Derek snaps. "And he's got no goddamn right to be jealous of Styles having a friend when he can't go 10 minutes without talking about Allison. Okay, that's 100% true. But I think it would do you a lot of good to be the bigger man here. Now Derek is really scowling, and Tom lets that sit as he lights the grill and tosses the match into the top of the chimney. Finally, Derek bites out, "Why?" "Because you're older, Derek. You're the one with the emotional maturity to sit back and say, yes, Scott is being a jerk, but I don't have to antagonize him at every possible opportunity. Because I can promise you that the way you two are fighting is not helping Styles. The ground's already pretty shaky beneath him right now. His best friend and his to-be boyfriend hating each other isn't making him feel any better." Derek sighs. "I know that. I don't know how else to deal with him." "Ignore him. He's not your problem. You don't have to go out of your way to tell him that his relationship is doomed. If you think he's making Styles uncomfortable, change the subject. If you think he's hurting Styles' feelings, say something that will make Styles feel better, not something that will make Scott feel like shit." Tom watches the Coles, frowning a little. "We're all getting used to each other, and to be frank, I'm not sure how I wound up in charge of this. I don't know where the hell Peter is in all this. It's like he just dumped them all in my lap." "Peter wasn't good at relating to teenagers even when he was a teenager," Derek says. "I guarantee you that he has zero clue how to talk to these kids. He can fake it, like he did on the shopping trips, but it wears him out. He needs to listen to Arlo Guthrie and yell at people to get off his lawn afterwards before he'll feel like himself again." The visual makes Tom laugh despite himself. "Well, he can't dump it all on me, but that's something for the two of us to negotiate, not you. In the meantime, just be there for Styles, okay? Because I promise you, in the long run, that's going to annoy Scott more than any barbed comment about Allison you could ever make." Derek snorts despite himself. "Okay." He rubs his hand over the back of his hair. "I'm worried about him. His nightmares aren't getting any better." "I know." Tom studies the grill again. "I keep putting off talking to him about it, hoping that things will settle down and he'll get better. But maybe this is as settled as things are going to get." "He knows he might need to talk to someone," Derek offers. "He mentioned a counselor at his school, although he didn't seem to like her very much." "Yeah? That's a promising sign if Styles has accepted that he might not be able to get through this just by wanting it. Okay, thanks. I'll talk to him about it. Why don't you go collar him and tell him to make a salad? If anything is going to make him feel better, it'll be shoving rabbit food down my throat." Derek laughs. "Yeah, okay, I'll do that." "Actually, before you go," Tom says, emptying the chimney out over the bed so he can start the steaks, "I was wondering what you thought about how many people Peter is turning." At this, Derek shrugs, looking neutral. "It makes sense. The more betas, the stronger the pack. 3 is really a bare minimum. There really is no maximum number you can have, although I've heard that larger packs have problems sharing the alpha. A problem I guess we won't have, since Peter isn't even around." It's just that Peter obviously wants to turn Boyd, and I guess I'm not comfortable with that." Why? Tom sighs. "I don't know. I was sort of hoping you would tell me that Peter is moving too fast, coming on too strong, and my worries would look rational. If you think what he's doing isn't a problem, then maybe I'm the one who needs to take a step back." Derek shifts uncomfortably. "I don't know a lot about building a pack, but what Peter's doing seems normal to me. He didn't go out looking for Boyd. Erica's the one who brought him in. That's how it usually works. Beta's bringing in friends and family to expand the pack. If Boyd's willing, then there's no problem." "Maybe I just feel like a teenager really can't understand something that would affect them the rest of their lives. They're 16. They can't vote, can't join the military. They can't even get a tattoo, for crying out loud." Tom takes a deep breath. "I made exceptions for Erica and Scott because of their illnesses. Boyd is different. Peter says I only feel this way because I was turned against my will, that it's preconditioned me to think of lycanthropy as a bad thing. But I don't know. It's both good and bad, I think. But it's different. It's not the sort of choice a child should be making. But I'm worried that if I tell Peter that, he'll just go find more chronically ill teenagers to bite. I don't think so, Derek says. You brought Erica to his attention. Scott, too. You told him not to bite Boyd, so he hasn't. Don't you see what he's doing? He's letting you choose the pack members. Maybe that's why he's keeping his distance. It probably feels like this is more your pack than his. Tom blinks at him, but he has to admit that Derek has a point. I guess I'll talk to him about that. I don't want him feeling left out. Derek shrugs and shoves his hands into his pockets. That's his problem, not mine. Tom snorts. Fair enough. Okay, I'll stop trying to make you solve all my problems now. Why don't you go in and tell Stiles to get started on the salad? Okay. Derek pauses, then says, But I don't mind. You know, being a sounding board when you need one. Thanks, Derek, Tom says. I appreciate that, really. Derek gives a hesitant little smile, then turns and heads back into the house. It takes Tom over a week to arrange a meeting with Chris, whose behavior is starting to border on paranoid. Tom supposes that he can't really blame him, considering the content of his father's character. Chris agrees to meet him at another diner, but insists that Tom wait until he's been there 15 minutes before showing up, so it will look like Tom tracked him down, rather than something prearranged. If you didn't want to meet in person, I could have just texted you, Tom says, after the waitress puts down his coffee and walks away. And risk the text being read? No thank you, Chris says. Tom thinks about mentioning that phones have this nifty feature called Password Protect, but then thinks better of the idea. That might help Chris, but it might not. Gerard probably doesn't know the password to Chris's phone, but Victoria probably does. And given some of the things that Allison has said about her mother, Tom is pretty sure that she's not on their side. Well, I have kind of an odd question. Do you know if your father is sick? Chris gives him a blank look. He hasn't mentioned it. Why? Apparently werewolves can smell certain illnesses, Tom says. I didn't realize what it was when I met him, so I went and talked to Deaton. We think it may be a kind of cancer. He had... Well, there's no way to say this that isn't weird, so here it is. I spent half an hour smelling sick dogs. He looks up at the ceiling. Why is this my life? Chris gives a snort of laughter despite himself, but the smile fades quickly. I don't know. Like I said, he hasn't said anything about it. But he wouldn't. Anyway, I don't see how it's relevant. It could be. The bite cures illnesses, remember? Tom says. At this, Chris just looks blank. The idea of his father wanting to be a werewolf is such a foreign concept to him that Tom has to spell it out, continuing, He might be trying to find Peter so he can get the bite and cure himself. Are you kidding? Chris shakes his head. My father would never do that. I don't know, Chris. A terminal diagnosis can change people in pretty profound ways. Tom doesn't bother to bring up Peter's opinion that Gerard only hunts werewolves because he likes the challenge. Trust me, because I remember this from when my wife got sick. That bargaining stage can go to some pretty impressive extremes. You say that because you don't know him like I do, Chris says. Maybe. And I guess it doesn't really matter in the long run. The reason he wants to find Peter is moot, but I also have to wonder if finding Peter is his entire goal. Peter's not exactly hiding. I mean, he's not subtle even at the best of times, and he's been at my house more evenings than not, which makes me feel like there's something else to this that we're not seeing. It's not enough for him to find Peter if Peter has no reason to give him the bite. So just humor me for a few seconds and consider. If your father wanted to force Peter to bite him, how would he do it? Chris still looks dubious, but he stops and thinks about the question. Leverage, he finally says. He knows that Peter wouldn't break under torture. Not someone who's been through the sort of pain he has. Which means he needs to find someone that Peter cares about. And not just anyone. Gerard would kill Peter as soon as he's turned to get the alpha power. He would never risk Peter having power over him. Apparently there's a possibility that killing the alpha who turned you reverses the bite, Tom says. Chris shrugs. I've never heard that, but I haven't exactly spent a lot of time interviewing werewolves either. And my point stands. If it reverses the bite, so be it. In fact, from my father's standpoint, that would be even better. He'd be cured, and he wouldn't be a werewolf. Okay, Tom says, though he makes a mental note to check and see if this is true. Peter had mentioned that Scott was still technically asthmatic, and Erica still epileptic. It was just that their bodies could halt and heal the damage their diseases did. Gerard might be in for one kick in the ass if he turned Peter and killed him, expecting to be cured. And Peter would know this, which means he wouldn't just do what Gerard wanted unless he had a damn compelling reason. He pushes a hand through his hair, thinking things over. It's what he expected out of Gerard, but he still has questions. But there are plenty of vulnerable people in Peter's life right now. Why not go after Derek, or me and Stiles? Peter risked his life to save us already. True, but that was a calculated risk, and he knew he had a good chance of surviving. This would be different. Chris stirs his coffee slowly, as if looking for answers in the mug. It's one thing for Peter to risk his life for you. It's another for him to give his life for you. Tom has to admit that Chris has a point. None of this makes Gerard's plan any more clear. I don't suppose your werewolf nose gave you any sort of idea how much time my father has? Chris asks, and Tom shakes his head. Okay, but my guess is that we're talking 6 months or more. My father can be very patient. He might just be waiting for the opportune moment, waiting and watching to see what Peter does. If he's watching us, he's doing a good job of not giving himself away, Tom says. None of us have noticed anything. Give us some credit. We're good at what we do, you know. Chris finishes his coffee, then sighs. Look, since we're talking, maybe you can do me a favor. My wife isn't happy with the fact that Allison is dating a werewolf. So I've heard, Tom says dryly, repeatedly, dramatically, often with profanity you probably wish your daughter didn't know, occasionally with references to the KKK. Chris pinches the bridge of his nose. I know you think we're bigoted assholes, okay? I know you think my wife is being ridiculous. I'm still trying to make sense of all this, and I'm doing my goddamn best. Tom sighs. Okay, you're right. My attitude isn't helping, and I apologize. What favor are you hoping I can do for you? If I say something to Allison, she's just going to get her back up. But she respects you. She's smart enough to know that you're the one who wanted her in the loop, not me. Could you just talk to her and try to explain to her that even though she's the one in the right, throwing this in Victoria's face is only making things worse? Tom takes a moment to think about that, deciding whether or not it would be a good idea. As long as you understand that I'm not going to tell her to break up with Scott, or even pretend to break up with Scott, yes. I will talk to her about maybe taking it a bit easy on you guys, because unlearning prejudice is hard work, and screaming at people about it never fixed anything. Chris looks a little relieved. Thanks. I mean, he shifts uncomfortably. Scott seems like a good kid. I'm hoping if we just give Victoria some time to get used to the idea, she won't be as upset. I'll see what I can do. Tom heads back to work, thinking things over. He tries to remember when Peter's absence had started. Was it after they had found out Gerard was sick? Is he trying to distance himself from the betas, from Tom and Stiles, to make them look less like targets? He thinks it might have been. His house has been packed central from the beginning, but it's only in the last week or two that Peter himself has stopped showing up in the evening. There's only one way to find out, so for the first time, he heads over to Peter's apartment. It's downtown, in an old brick building. It's a little on the small side, although it would be fine for one person, and somehow Peter has decorated it with old tapestries and walls of books. "Well, look who the cat dragged in," he says, smirking as he stands back to let Tom inside. "I talked to Chris," Tom says. "His father hasn't said anything about being sick, but Chris says he might not talk to him about it. Hello to you, too. Want a beer? Tom sighs. Sure, he says, and follows Peter into the little galley kitchen. Peter gets two bottles and hands one over. Tom takes it, but doesn't drink. So if Gerard wants to force you to turn him into a werewolf, what do we do? Peter shrugs. Nothing. It doesn't matter what he does, I'm not going to do it. Okay, Tom says slowly, but he's not exactly going to take no for an answer. So he'll try to hurt the pack, and I'll kill him. Problem solved. Peter takes a pull from his beer. Anything else? I thought this might be why you're distancing yourself from the pack. Peter arches an eyebrow. No, I'm doing that because you made it quite clear that you think I'm a bad influence on them, and you don't want me around. That takes Tom aback. Wait, I did what now? Peter's eye roll is dramatic. You didn't want me to turn them to begin with, even when I talked to them about it first. I know that you and I don't exactly coexist on the same moral wavelength, but if you don't want me around them, you should have just said so. If I didn't want you around them, I would have just said so. Tom is frowning at him. Instead, you dumped everything in my lap, and I've spent the last 2 weeks trying to get a bunch of kids with all these new instincts to not murder each other. It hasn't exactly been easy, and I really don't appreciate suddenly being the one responsible for it. Jesus, Tom, what do you want from me? Peter asks. No matter what I do, it's the wrong thing. You didn't want me to build a pack at all. That is not true. You tried to talk me out of turning literally everyone I turned, and then you got snippy when I turned them anyway, even if you had previously agreed to it. So I thought, now that I have the strength and numbers I'd need to get rid of Gerard if I had to, I'll just let you handle things. Now you're pissed at me for that. So what the hell do you want me to do? Tom pushes a hand through his hair. Okay, let's back up. I know that... He stops and lets out a breath. I know that I might not be entirely rational about you turning betas. I know that I haven't reacted well, but I tried to put a lid on it. I've never talked about it in front of the kids. I didn't say anything to Boyd except that you weren't around. So even though I'm not entirely comfortable with the idea of you turning people, I've recognized that that's my problem, not anybody else's. So why don't you tell me exactly when I gave you the idea that I didn't want you near the kids at all? Think back, Tom. Think about when I said we should turn Stiles for his protection, and you ripped my head off. Because Stiles doesn't want to be a werewolf. Tom takes a deep breath. But you're right. I overreacted. It's hard to see my son hurting and not know how to help him. You told me no, and I would have respected that, but then you had to go and tell me not to pressure him behind your back, which is something I haven't done to anyone. So thank you, Tom, for your vote of confidence. Thank you for warning Allison that I'm a deranged lunatic who can't be trusted. Peter, I didn't... Yes, you did, and I know you did, because you wouldn't have had a problem with me being there for that conversation, wouldn't have gotten rid of me first, if you weren't going to say that. I don't know what I ever did to you to make you treat me like this, but... Okay, hold the fuck up, Tom says, losing his temper. You don't know what you did to me? Are you fucking kidding me with that, Peter? You attacked me, changed me into a werewolf, then spent the next several weeks trying to force me to help you. You tried to make me hurt my son. You got me involved in all of this against my will, and that ended in my son nearly being killed. He can't sleep at night because of what happened, and you don't know what you did? Peter looks away. I thought you were okay with what had happened after it was over. Even if I am, that doesn't mean you didn't do it. Me adjusting to my new life, me learning how to deal with this, doesn't magically make what you did to me a non-issue. Tom takes a deep breath. We all have to work together now, so I'm trying, okay? I know that you weren't entirely in your right mind, and I know that you aren't my enemy. I'm doing my best to help you, but don't leap down my throat when I don't react the way you want me to, because I'm still trying to deal with this. Fine. Peter still won't look at him. Although, you know, this only makes it seem more like you don't want me around. Peter, I want to be over what you did to me. I want to move on and be your friend. If I could snap my fingers and do it in an instant, I would. It just doesn't work that way. I'm putting in an effort, so I need you to do that too. And that doesn't mean making everything my responsibility because you think that I'll be happier that way. Use your words, for Christ's sake. Peter nods. He doesn't speak for a long minute. Finally, he says, I'm sorry for what I did to you. I don't think I had said that before. Tom relaxes, his shoulders releasing tension he hadn't realized was there. That's a great start, Peter. Thank you. Not being sarcastic at all, I genuinely appreciate that. Can we... Peter's head jerks around suddenly, like he's heard a noise in the distance. I have to go, he says abruptly. One of the betas is in trouble. Scott, I think. I should go with you. No. Peter's eyes are crimson, but his voice isn't angry. I want you out of harm's way. Get the others, go back to the house. Keep them safe. I'll meet you there once I've collected Scott. He's out the window without another word, and Tom knows he won't catch up. He grabs his phone and calls Stiles, who says he's at the house with Derek. Isaac, Erica, and Boyd are there, but Scott and Allison aren't. Tom tells them to sit tight, he'll be there in a few minutes, and heads home. He uses the lights, but not the sirens, and gets home in half the time it would normally take. What's going on? Stiles asks, his face even paler than usual. I'm not sure, Tom says. Peter said something was wrong. He went to collect Scott. He squeezes Stiles' shoulder and says, I'm sure he'll get Scott out of whatever trouble he's gotten himself into. It hasn't escaped Tom's notice that this is probably some sort of trap, even though he can't imagine why Gerard would have picked Scott, of all people, to target. He's tense and anxious as he paces around the house, waiting. Derek remarks quietly that they would know if their alpha had been killed, which brings Tom a little comfort. Fortunately for his nerves, Peter shows up about 10 minutes later, with one arm around Scott's shoulders, helping him stumble along. The teenager is paler than usual and has some scuff marks on his face and his clothes. What happened? Stiles demands, pulling Scott into a tight hug. Scott just coughs a little and hugs back. Derek reaches out, hesitates, and then gives Scott's shoulder a squeeze. Come on, let's get you sitting down. Scott nods. Tom and Derek help him over to the sofa, and Isaac gets him a glass of water. What happened? Tom asks again, more quietly. Allison's mom, Scott wheezes. She had wolfsbane in this aerator thing. Wanted to make it look like an asthma attack. Tom's jaw tightens, and he immediately starts wondering how much of this might be provable in a court of law. He looks over at Peter, only to realize that Peter's gone. He startles a little, then sighs and pulls out his phone. He debates for a long minute over what to send, since, please don't go kill every living Argent, is probably uncalled for. He starts with, are you okay? A few minutes later, while everyone is still fussing over Scott, Peter texts back a simple yes. Is there anything you need me to do? No, Peter replies. Tom thinks this over. Should I go arrest Victoria Argent? Peter replies more quickly than he would have expected. By now she will have disposed of the evidence. Getting Scott to safety was my priority. I doubt we could prove anything. We'll just have to be more careful. Okay, Tom replies. He tucks away his phone and says, Scott, you should call your mother. I want you staying here tonight. We're going to have to talk about some safety rules, but let's worry about that tomorrow. Stiles, he sees the way Stiles is hovering over Scott and changes his mind. Never mind. I'll order some dinner. Chinese okay with everyone? He asks, and everyone seems fine with that. Tom pulls out a takeout menu and settles in for a long evening. He doesn't sleep much that night. Peter still doesn't appear. Tom doesn't know why, and he doesn't like it. Stiles is clearly 1 inch away from having a complete freakout, no matter how many times Scott reassures him that he's okay. Derek, to his credit, has packed away the jealousy and is staying right by both of them without antagonizing Scott even a little. Tom makes a mental note to call Deaton in the morning and ask if he can recommend a counselor for Stiles. He finally drifts into an exhausted doze near dawn and sleeps later than he means to. His phone wakes him, and he sees Chris's name on the screen. "Oh, this should be good," he mutters and picks it up. "Yes?" Chris's voice trembles slightly. "I need your help." Tom pushes back the urge to be petty. "With?" "With my wife," Chris says. Tom is about to open his mouth and tell Chris that he was lucky his wife hasn't been arrested, but then Chris continues, "I think she's going to kill herself."